Can I ask you a question?
Sure. Okay, so Boker Tov, we're here at Torahim Tovim. We're here at Matan Sharon with our final class of Judaism and the Isms. Today we're going to focus on Judaism's encounter with coronavirus and scientism and Haredism and monorthodoxy. And we're going to look at this from a theological perspective. I'm not so much interested in the lockdown, and I'm not talking about that. Okay, I want to talk about what does this say about Jewish theology? Okay, so we're going to look at three different articles, which all have very different perspectives, fascinating perspectives. We'll look at some traditional sources as well, and I'm sure this will raise a number of really interesting questions, okay, about how we respond theologically to coronavirus. So can anyone, I'm just curious to hear from you, what questions does coronavirus raise from a Jewish theological standpoint?
Why?
Okay, why? Why? How could God let this happen? Hundreds of thousands of people dying. The economic toll is also devastating. So that's a theodicy question. Why do bad things happen to, you know, good people? Okay, what else? What's another question that comes up?
What is our responsibility to the community in terms of following directives from the authorities to help prevent the spread of the disease?
Okay, that's good. Okay, can you explore that a little bit more? Maybe differences between different communities in this regard?
Well, if we know for a fact that wearing a mask, for example, out in public, they're now telling us 83% effective in reducing the spread of the disease. Do we then have a religious obligation to wear masks in order to help prevent the spread of the disease? What is our obligation to contributing towards the improvement of public
saving
health?
Protecting other people in a sense. It's a really important question.
And also conversely, with the dictum of v'nishmaltem me'od. What steps are we required to take to protect ourselves?
Yeah, it's an important question. What about when you have like clashing values? What about going to minyan to daven on behalf of other people, even if that could cause people to get sick? Okay,
so
say again.
Keeping the yeshivot open.
When
they kept saying, "Oh, you have Mishrad HaChinuch," and they said, "Yeah, but we have." I forgot his name. Rav Chaim Kanievsky.
Why is it also a theological question about keeping yeshivot open?
Well, they said the yeshivot could protect us more, and
what is it that's going to protect us?
Close the yeshivot.
What's going to protect us from coronavirus? Is it a vaccine? Or is it Bachorim Learning in Panovich Yeshiva or Merkaz Harav or the Gush? What is going to save us? What protects us?
I think you're getting into the question of the whole Haredi thing. We don't go to the army because our limud is protecting us.
Okay, so Nachon. So that's a very interesting question. Nachon. It's the same issue. Good. So let's jump right in now to the. Let me open up the source sheet here. Okay, and I'm gonna put it on, share it on Zoom. 1 second.
One of my not favorite lines was they were interviewing somebody and they said you have your Ramatkal and we have our Ramatkal, referring to Rav Kanievsky. You know,
yeah.
So you listen to your people, we listen to our people.
Yeah. Nachon. And that raises a really interesting question. Well, were they right about doing that?
My Baba would have said, and this might be a little bit irreverent, she would have said, Das hat geholfen wie a taten bunkers. It helped like a dead bug.
In terms
of, winning a battle or just staying at home and davening, there's the logistics, a lot of logistics involved in that.
Nachon. Okay, so let's jump right in. Now, what we have here are three articles, one by Rabbi Yitz Greenberg. Rabbi Yitz Greenberg is a liberal Orthodox thinker. That's number one. I'm sure some of you have heard of him before. Article number two is an article by Professor Shaul Magid, who's a professor of Jewish thought at Dartmouth University in America. And the third article is an article by Rabbi Yitzchak Blau. Okay, I'll just put a rabbi here. Okay, that's the third article. Okay, we're going to look at some classic sources. Let's jump right in. We're going to have a few people read today. Let's start with Rabbi Yitz Greenberg. Our hearts go out to the members of the ultra-Orthodox community, Israel and worldwide. Chabadim are found in disproportionate numbers among the sick and the dead of the coronavirus pandemic. They are civilian casualties of the cruel, unrelenting war on all humanity being waged by the coronavirus. The fact that this war is not driven by anti-Semitism, as was the Holocaust, it is not directed at Jews specifically, makes it no less heinous and the victims no less innocent. Numerous people have angrily blamed Haredim for the high losses in the community, arguing that their leaders initially rejected medical instructions. Okay, and they spread things much more in their midst. Skip to the next paragraph. However, before the Holocaust, many Hasidic leaders told their followers not to go to Israel or America. During the catastrophe, many advised against flight, especially when done in cooperation with Zionists, and strongly opposed resistance. The outcome was a much higher percentage of deaths among Haredim, approaching 90% average. But nobody would think of condemning the victims for following bad advice and policies. Bad judgment does not justify rejection or hatred of innocent victims. Haredim are flesh of my blood and bone of the Jewish people. They deserve compassion and care at this time of their troubles. So this is, he's writing this close to the beginning of coronavirus, when B'nai Brak wasn't locked down and their numbers were, you know, spiking in Yerushalayim as well as B'nai Brak and Elad, etc. Proper understanding the Haredi situation includes acknowledging the legitimate factors that increase their vulnerability to the pandemic. They have larger families, they live in smaller apartments, more intense religious communal life, etc. At the same time, respect for the truth and commitment to prevent a recurrence requires that we critique the flawed Haredi theology that leads to greater losses in these communities. So he's now going to argue in a theological perspective why the Haredim were wrong about coronavirus. Okay, number one, who would like to read number one? Karen, would you like to start us off? Number one. First and foremost.
It's always me. Number one, first and foremost, I'll turn on the video. Oh, hello? Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what happened to my screen. Hold on. I lost my screen. I'm sorry to delay you all.
No, okay. It's you could read without having your screen on.
Okay, here we go. First and foremost, they follow literally the biblical model in which God controls and does everything in history. They firmly believe that as long as humans please God by doing mitzvot, God will defeat their enemies and grant them victory. See the exodus from Egypt and the splitting of the Red Sea. They are oblivious to the main rabbinic interpretation of the Bible's covenant idea that God has self-limited.
Okay, what does that mean that God is self-limited? Can anyone explain that?
He's handed it over to us.
You have
Maloch lo ha'aretz kevodo.
No, but that means that God's everywhere.
If you have Maloch lo ha'aretz kevodo, if the whole earth is full of his glory, then how is there room for anybody or any other thing? So God had to constrict himself to make room for us.
Okay, but that's at the beginning of creation. That's a Kabbalistic idea at the beginning of creation. What he is referring to here is that over time, God has not removed himself entirely from the world, but made space for others. God has asked humans to take a more active role in history, with the results depending on the people of Israel's efforts.
Well, you have all the social laws of the Torah itself.
Okay, interesting. Danny, what do you want to say?
Referring to the hesterpanim or not, or something else?
Are we referring to, it's not quite hesterpanim, but what he's referring to here is, think of the parable of a child. Is that when a child grows up, a parent does everything for them. As you get older, a parent needs to step back to give a child more space to grow and take on more independence. So God gives us more independence and responsibility for the world over time. So he's not saying that God never did miracles. He did miracles at the beginning, you know, closer to the beginning of history, Yetziat Mitzrayim. But now God has taken a step back and says, hey, you humans, you be shutafim, you be my partners in making the world a better place. And now it's going to be based also on your efforts. Okay, so
This is what I meant by all the social legislation of the Torah. If God, for example, Parashat Shoftim, if Hashem wants us to appoint judges and policemen and courts, then obviously He's not taking care of every single detail. He wants us to do that.
Okay, so this is now we're starting to get to the core of a difference between modern Orthodox and a Haredi theology. Let's keep going. I keep reading. Go for two more paragraphs, Karen. When presented with a question.
See the Talmudic interpretation of Purim in which when presented with the question, should Haredi schools be closed to prevent infection? Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky replied, God forbid, learning Torah protects and saves the Jewish people. He dismissed medical considerations because God controls every detail of history. Learning Torah would please the Lord, who would protect Jewry. This is the same theology that undergirds the Haredi refusal to let their youth serve in the Israel Defense Forces. Not tanks and fighters, but the exempted students learning Torah are the real defense force of the Jewish state.
Okay, so
I just
want to
say one thing here.
Yeah.
Up above where you said regarding the Haredi refusal during the lead up to the Holocaust and during the Holocaust, the Haredi refusal to take advantage of exit opportunities that were sponsored by less than Haredi Jews, that nobody blamed them. That's not true. There is a lot of blame.
Okay, there is, nachon. But what Rabbi Yitz Greenberg is doing here is comparing the Haredi response to the Holocaust, serving in the IDF, and coronavirus. And he sees all of these as a similar theme here of Haredim thinking that the mitzvah will protect us. As long as we're following halacha, God is going to control everything and make things end well. And the reality, and he's in Rabbi Yitz Greenberg argues the Holocaust, the best example that didn't work out so well. Number two, without fighter pilots and tanks, you don't have an army. And number three, look at your numbers for coronavirus, less so in Israel, thank God, but in New York, Haredim were hit particularly hard in Brooklyn, hundreds of deaths. So let's keep going.
And amongst the Haredi communities in England as well.
Rabbi, it says
in the Torah, it says, when your brothers go to fight, will you not join them? You have your part to play. Hashem is not going to be up there, once we fought Amalek and everybody coming out of Egypt, now we're on the way back to Israel or whatever, and we're getting into Israel. We had to pick up the pieces and do our part.
Fantastic. So, we're gonna get there. We're gonna get to that. There's a piece in a Bravino, which you're essentially quoting, we're gonna look at very soon. Okay. So now Rabbi Yitz Greenberg, let's get through him. This theology is refuted by the actual facts of real life. It has not led to catastrophe in the past because 90% of Israelis understand that Israel would be destroyed instantly by its enemies if it did not have an army. The 90% serve their time and give their lives, allowing Haredim to be saved from the folly of their interpretation, which makes the Torah unlivable for a whole society. In the coronavirus case, this policy, which totally fails in reality, was applied to the community. The consequences are devastating. And now number two, the second serious misinterpretation of Haredi theology is to see sickness and natural catastrophes as divine punishment for sins rather than as natural phenomena. The Talmud disagrees. The natural order operates objectively. It does not differentiate between righteous and wicked people. Rabbi Kanievsky was quoted as saying that the virus is a punishment for Lashon Hara, harmful speech, gossip, that people should stop and repent and the plague would stop. The flip side of punishment for sin is the Haredi teaching that if you're doing a religious act, God will keep you safe. Those who are agents doing a mitzvah will not be harmed. This is Shluchei Mitzvah. Okay, keep going. Danny, you want to keep reading? Some Haredim.
Some Haredim allowed themselves to be exposed to coronavirus because God would protect them.
I don't know anyone who actually went that far. Many evangelicals, keep going.
Many evangelical Christians around the world have done the same. Given the natural laws and medical evidence of pandemic, this behavior is nothing but magical thinking. Magic claims that through certain words or actions, in this case, religious faith and behaviors, God is, quote, compelled to do what the practitioner wants. The Torah treats magic as abhorrent. It constitutes a denial of God's freedom. The Bible insists that no divine action can be compelled by human gifts, behaviors, or tricks. Magical thinking also disrespects God's miraculous creation. It claims to override the objective and dependable system of natural processes and laws.
Okay, so he's saying two things here. Number one, he's essentially accusing Charedim of magical thinking, which is that they can bend the will of God. That's what magic is, to think that you do, God is going to be compelled to follow what you want him to do. And he sees that to some degree as avodah zarah, denial of God's freedom. He also believes that there's something called nature and that the world functions according to nature. And God wants the world to run according to nature, and it's a denial of God's creation of nature. Okay? So now he goes on then to critique Charedi Gedolim, who have, you know, encouraged their followers to be insular, to, you know, lack secular education, you know, because this has kept them, you know, created a stronger followership. And this, and you know, he sees, so he puts the blame on Charedi Gedolim, and he thinks they should have been voted out of office if there was such a vote. There is no such vote in the Charedi world, and he thinks that leaders are responsible for you know, leading their people astray, and in particular, people like Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Okay, I'm curious. What do you think? You know, one or two comments. I want to hear also from someone who has
a comment. Rabbi Litzman chose to go by nature, and as soon as he went down with the virus, he told everyone, no, you mustn't daven in a minyan, you must daven on your own.
So you're saying, well, he davened in a minyan violating the rules, right?
He davened in a minyan, he went to a wedding, he associated Correct. With hundreds of people, and as Correct. Soon as he went down with the virus, he realized, maybe there's another side to this.
Yeah, it was very irresponsible what he did, for sure. But do you guys agree with Yitz Greenberg here, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. But I would say, Rabbi, on the strength of something that I read by Meshi Zahav, the saintly guy who started and who runs Zaka, and he explained, he said that the Haredi community of which he, from where he comes, is so insular. He says they don't listen to TV, of course. They don't have radios. They don't have cell phones. They don't have internet. They simply don't understand. And I think that's a fair thing as well to say. They really don't know and are not living in the century, so to speak.
So, okay, so this is, I mean, you know, he gives them the benefit of the doubt that they may not have the same communication that we have. But, you know, and they didn't have the same knowledge, at least in the beginning, that we have for those who have access to WhatsApp and the news and TV. But that's why he critiques the leaders for creating a community that's so insular.
Yeah,
let's move on. Listen, there's a lot.
I wanted to add something, though. Yeah. In the Shas elementary schools, they don't have a subject called Teva, which exists in every other elementary school, in the Mamad, in the Mamlachti. Everybody learns Teva, which is loosely the science class. But in the Shas schools, they learn the same stuff, only they call it Nifla'ot HaBore.
Ah, okay. So that's okay.
And
that's,
so
that's interesting.
When I used to teach science here in Israel, I used to tell everybody, I teach Limudei Kodesh. And they would say, really? You know, because they know that I don't have a rabbinic or Limudei Kodesh background. And I would say, yeah, I teach Nifla'ot HaBore.
Ah.
And when you look at it that way, which I believe is the proper perspective, then actually science is a religious subject.
Of course it is.
Correct. But we're talking about whether science is, first of all, does science exist? I mean, does nature exist? This is something, as we'll see, that Charedim, not all Charedim believe in.
If you take the story of creation, then it must exist.
Well, No, you listen, nature can mean one of two things. Nature can mean reality, like the world around us. Everyone agrees nature exists. There are trees outside and there are, you know, clouds. But the question is nature as this, you know, certain chemical, physical, biological laws that you know, are constantly, that, you know, that are true on every day, you know, in the history of the world, that, you know, that, you know, is the world run by natural laws? That's what we mean by nature in this case. And that's where there's a difference between Charedim and non-Orthodox, and we're gonna get to that. Now let's jump into the next article. This is by Shaul Magid, again, a professor of Jewish thought at Dartmouth University. He's going to respond to Yitz Greenberg, and very interesting. So let's jump right in. At an academic conference some years ago, I heard the following joke told by the philosopher Slavoj Žižek. A student went to his philosopher professor's house for a visit. As he knocked on the front door, he noticed there was a horseshoe hanging above the doorpost. When the professor entered the door, the student said, "Dear professor, why do you have a horseshoe hanging above the door? Everything you taught us would say believing in this stuff is nonsense." The professor replied, "Oh yes, I certainly do not believe any of it, but they say it works even if you don't believe." I thought of this joke as I read the many essays about Haredi or ultra-Orthodox Jews' responses to the coronavirus. The many attempts have been made to try to understand and often criticize the Haredi community's lack of expediency in closing yeshivot, enacting social distancing, and heeding medical advice. Many reasons have been given as to why this was so, some more convincing than others. Some attribute their action to underlying beliefs and the protective character of Torah study. Others have a strong focus on communal religious worship. Frequently we find criticism, often from non-Orthodox circles, that these beliefs are so embedded in the Haredi world that they've undermined their ability to heed science. Others claim the Haredim's lack of scientific education made them unprepared to understand what was at stake. A certain cynical attitude underlies some of these accusations, as if to suggest that Haredi Jews have somehow misinterpreted or misunderstood normative Judaism in ways that resulted in endangering their communities. What I find more compelling as an explanation is an innate distrust of civil authorities' ability to judge when a danger is so extreme that it would mandate ceasing from religious activities. Now, there's a piece here that I took out, but basically what he says is that Haredim also believe that when danger comes, you have to stay away. The question is, who determines what's dangerous? Is it the doctors? Is it Moshe Tov Siman, whatever the guy's name is, Ben Simon, who's the, you know, the head of the health ministry in Israel at some point? Or is it the Haredi Gedolim? How do you define, okay, you know, what's dangerous? So, but what has been less examined...
I can only imagine what Rambam would have thought of all of this.
Well, he's going to quote Rambam. Let's keep going. But what has been less examined is the extent to which his dire situation exposes certain fissures in modern iterations of Judaism more generally. It makes plain what we all knew, which was that many Jews who claim fidelity to normative Jewish law and practice, as rooted in the textual tradition, have also absorbed the enlightened idea that science or scientific knowledge represents the most accurate representation of reality, even or especially when it conflicts with religious beliefs. It is certainly true that Haredi believers misjudged this pandemic and their constituents have paid a high price. However, the Haredim were negligent in part because they actually took seriously religious beliefs that many traditional Jews claim to hold. In other words, they really believe it. And he's going to go on to claim that modern Orthodox, we don't believe enough. And Haredim, they may be consistent, you know, they may have suffered for it, but at least they're consistent and they really believe what the Torah actually says. And he says modern Orthodox Jews actually don't really believe. They believe much more in science than in the Torah. The notion of
Rabbi, science and our understanding and all these wonderful medical things, ultimately they come from Hashem.
Okay, so we're gonna get there. This is why these you'll see these three articles go really nicely together. The notion of covenantal reciprocity, that our actions are an answer to divine command that will evoke divine mercy, runs down the spine of the entire tradition. Does not suggest mitzvah will always protect us as if they are some magical formula. We know this is not the case. As the sages somewhat cynically teach, there are no rewards for mitzvot in this world. But this equation is arguably the very operating system of Judaism. Other Jewish communities that pledge fidelity to the tradition are well aware of these rabbinic precepts and this idea. But in actuality, they do not really believe them, not when confronted with scientific counter-evidence. And what exactly does that say about the belief of the modern Jew? What he's saying here is that the overall position in Jewish theology is that the mitzvot protect us. And the Haredim believe that. And that's why they went to Minyanim longer than we did. And that's why they kept their yeshivot open longer. And that's why they listened to Rav Chaim Kanievsky instead of listening to the health ministry. Now, it is certainly true that the rabbinic priesthood in a life-threatening situation nullifies all obligations, and Haredim know that as well as non-Haredi Jews. But when the pandemic met the Allah, the mandated pikuach nefesh, is a matter of which there can be some debate. Okay, he speaks about pikuach nefesh, etc. Now, keep going to the next paragraph. For the Jew who professes belief in the tradition and also in secular science, the threat of the coronavirus has helped illuminate where his emphases lie. In a recent essay on the subject, coronavirus is a wake-up call for ultra-Orthodox Jews. A minor Orthodox rabbinic hero, Irving Yitz Greenberg, claims that the ideology of the Haredim are refuted by facts. But how do facts refute a theology or support it? He continues, the second serious misinterpretation in Haredi theology is to see sickness and natural catastrophe as divine punishment for sins rather than as natural phenomena. Of course, that theology is not exclusively Haredi, but throws through most of the canonical tradition, including our liturgy. Because of our sins, we were exiled. He's saying, this is classic Judaism. This is not just Haredi theology. This is, Yitz Greenberg tries to make it just a Haredi thing. This is, you know, Ashamnu Baganu, and that's why we were sent into exile. In addition, Greenberg attributes Haredi action to a belief in magic. He writes that magic claims that a certain word or action, in this case, the religious faith behavior, is God is compelled to do what the practitioner wants. The Torah treats magic as abhorrent. This is true, but not quite what was at issue with the Haredi. When one says a Torah study protects the Jew, he's not saying that it compels God to protect them from harm. Rather, it suggests that doing God's will serves as strengthening a covenantal bond between God and Israel that merits divine protection. This supposition can be found in thousands of canonical sources. There's nothing inherently mystical or magical about it. Greenberg accuses the Haredi community of engaging what he calls magic by literally believing and acting on what the sages said about the protective nature of mitzvot. This is what the Torah teaches us. What do you want? It says in Shema, we keep the mitzvot, we'll have rain. We don't keep the mitzvot, we're going to be kicked out of the land. This is basic Jewish theology. Okay, who has not read yet that would like to read? Leslie, would you like to read Consider?
Yeah, just a second. Okay. Sorry, where are I? Oh, consider that Jews often recite psalms in times of distress, of danger. Is it just to calm our nerves, or do we believe it can be in some way real efficacious? If the latter, is that magic? The fact that the modern Orthodox and other Jewish communities quickly ceased from the public study of Torah, closed schools and sheltered in place, was indeed smart and correct. But the fact that there was not much consideration, as far as I know, about rabbinic teaching and the efficacy of mitzvot also says something about the ways those communities navigate between tradition and modernity. It seems clear when science trumps religious practice, we believe science. Nothing more to be said. The Haredim, on the other hand, actually believe these religious precepts and were thus slower to concede in these circumstances with tragic results. But perhaps
wow. What he's saying here, yeah, is that modern Orthodox will choose science over Jewish theology, and the Haredim chose Jewish belief over science. Now, there were consequences. More Haredim died. But he's essentially accusing the modern Orthodox community here of religious minimalism, of not believing essentially strongly enough in Torah values. Okay? Keep going, Leslie.
But perhaps we discount the Haredi response too flippantly. What does all this say about our relationship to the tradition? If this was simply about modern Jewish communities heeding their belief in science over religion, nothing here would be that new or interesting. But the story does not end here. The complexity of modernity in Judaism and religion more generally has another important layer. Modern traditional communities often pick and choose what to believe and what not to believe, what to take seriously and what to discount, sometimes in ways that are far closer to magic than the belief that Torah study protects one from harm.
Okay, now he brings all these examples of modern Orthodox Jews who dabble in, you know, essentially magical thinking, when by, you know, checking their mezuzot, or getting special segula water from Rav Yitzchak Kaduri, or going to a Kabbalist when, you know, someone's sick. He's saying, so modern Orthodox Jews, for the most part, he thinks, really believe in science more than anything else, will then dabble in this magical thinking when it suits them. And he thinks, well, how different is this than the professor who has the horseshoe on top of his door? He says, well, sometimes this works, so we do it. Okay, so this is a pretty withering critique of Shaul Magid against modern Orthodox Jews. Okay, so what if you really do believe? Okay? My point is that while Haredim may be exemplars of what scholars of religion Bruce Lincoln calls religious maximalism, other traditional Jews may be exemplars of religious minimalism. Such minimalism, however, is not consistent. It includes, and it can hurt unbelief and what we can call perhaps Zizek's horseshoe. If we have an ailment, we go to a doctor, and sometimes we may get a blessing from a Kabbalist. The former is necessary, and the latter is a kind of just-in-case-ism. Okay, we could add that to our list of isms. Okay, another ism that we're addressing.
But doesn't it take into account the effect that it has on other people in society and the death tolls that it can cause on other people in society. Take, for example, the measles jabs. If they don't get their kids vaccinated, air hostesses on El Al can die.
Correct?
Correct. Okay, so your point is that
it's a selfish situation. They're so enclosed in themselves that when they do mix with other societies, they're infecting those other societies. If they only kept to themselves and only them died, that's fine. They want to kill themselves, I have no problem. But it's when they come out of their enclave and they want to kill other people, that to me is a big problem.
Yeah. So their argument would be that what's really protecting Israel today, the Jewish people, it's not the doctors, it's not the vaccine, it's Torah study.
It's davening
in a minyan. That's really what protects, and that's what they'll say, that's what Jewish sources teach us as well. And so they're believing in what the Torah tells them to believe in. For the Haredi Jew, however, both may be necessary, perhaps equally. Many modern traditional Jews study Talmudic passages that support the Haredi position, but when the secular world, in this case science, intervenes, those views quickly give way. Why? Well, in part because they know that those teachings should not be taken literally. But then how do we determine what should be taken literally and what we shouldn't? Okay, so, you know, he continues on with this. He then thinks that he quotes Rav Soloveitchik as being someone who recognizes the ambiguity and skepticism in Judaism, and he thinks that that's maybe what modern Orthodoxy should be, you know, more engaged in, as opposed to a partial Haredism when it's useful. He talks about generally the situation of unorthodox Jews. He says, many modern Jews live as if we've resolved the paradox of religion and modernity. We found the great synthesis, the secret formula that enables us to be both religious and modern, but this is a ruse. That paradox is never solved and cannot be solved. We are often forced to choose, and when forced to choose, we probably choose science. Why? Because we believe in it more than we believe in tradition. Here's why, where we part from Haredim. They also believe in science to some degree. They seek medical treatment when necessary, but they believe in tradition more. And so when science dictates behavior that curtails tradition, they are slower to respond. The Haredim are believers in ways that we are not. In this case, it killed many of them. But whether we or they are living closer in closer fidelity to tradition remains to be seen. We believe less, and here that helped us survive. But as much as it is worth chastising their maximal belief, it is worth contemplating our lack of it. Okay, what do you guys think of this?
Rabbi, just one question. Who is Shaul Magid? Who is he?
So, Shaul Magid, I'm just going to... Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll show you. You could look up Shaul Magid. He's a professor of Jewish thought. Here you go. Pulling him up. Can everyone see the screen share? One second. You share. Okay, I'm just sharing Wikipedia with you. Shaul Magid is a distinguished fellow in Jewish studies at Dartmouth College. From 2014, he was professor of religious studies in the Jay and Jeannie Shani Chair of Jewish Studies in Modern Judaism at Indiana University, as well as a senior research fellow at the Shalom Hartman Institute. Okay, so he's in Jewish theology, Jewish thought. You could read more about him here. Personal life. He was Orthodox at one point. No longer today. It seems like he recently discussed Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead in relation to Judaism, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, interesting.
Lots to look at here. But the good. I want to move on to the third article now. Okay, new share. Let's go back to the score sheet. Okay. What's so funny?
That's a beautiful photograph you just flashed up.
Oh, of which one? Of me and my daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll show it to you afterwards. It is a beautiful picture. Okay, everyone see here? Now we're going to look at the third source. So we have Rav Yitzchak Blau and Shaul Magid, and now we're going to have Rabbi Yitzchak Blau respond essentially to both of these articles, okay? So let's jump right in. Shaul Magid's recent essay and tablet, COVID-19, Haredi Jews and Magical Thinking, generated a good deal of internet discussion. Not a surprise, as the essay touched on important questions regarding modern orthodoxy, the Haredi world, and their different ideologies. Magid argues that criticism of the Haredi response to the pandemic has been blown out of proportion, and that their behavior, in fact, reveals a fidelity to traditional ideas lacking in modern orthodox circles. Magid rejects Rabbi Yitzchak Greenberg's dual censure of the Haredi community in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Greenberg writes, etc. Now, Magid's critique hits home. Even if tradition includes multiple models of response to catastrophe, we cannot deny the prominence of the idea that traces suffering to sin. Secondly, Greenberg faults the Haredim for magical thinking, believing their actions can control a manipulate God. Again, Magid's critique strikes its target. Believing that God rewards and punishes for human behavior does not entail removing divine choice about how to respond. This tenet can be sharply distinguished from the morally indifferent concept of magic. Okay, so he thinks that Magid is correct in his critique of Greenberg. But now he's going to share the modern Orthodox perspective. He's going to defend modern Orthodoxy. Okay, who has not read yet today that would like to read Magid's essay? Go for it. Who would like to read?
I can read.
Go for it, yes.
Okay, Magid's essay criticizes modern orthodoxy's religious weakness in accepting the scientific view of the universe in contrast to Haredim who really believe. For Magid, viewing mitzvah performance as more protective than establishing a police force reflects authentic Judaism. Perhaps keeping Batei Midrash opens really battles coronavirus more powerfully than social distancing. This portrayal of Judaism radically oversimplifies matters.
So what is he saying about Magid? Magid has oversimplified our tradition. Magid says, listen, the mitzvot protect us. Keep the mitzvot to protect you. Don't keep the mitzvot, you'll get punished. But that's not the only view in Jewish tradition. Keep going.
Our tradition has always included a wide range of approaches to human suffering and the workings of divine providence. Any simple equation between suffering and sin must also confront Sefer Iyov. Okay. And the many...
That's the book of Job, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't recognize it that way. And the many Talmudic models that outline other possibilities. God faults Job's friends
for attributing
his travails to sinfulness. Talmudic teachings about afflictions of love, there is suffering without sin, and reward
for the commandments is not found in this world. All contradict, I'll keep reading, a simplistic application of reward and punishment based solely on religious behavior. Rabbi Yitzchak, I was saying, there are multiple views about the connection between punishment, reward, and afflictions, okay, and crises and tragedy. It's not like so clear that if you learn the Torah, you're going to be protected. That's one view, but there are other views, and modern orthodoxy holds on to a more sophisticated view of this, that there isn't a direct causality. Furthermore, Judaism respects the natural order and the need to consider human initiative within that order. One is not allowed to rely on a miracle, Ein Somchin Al Hanes in Hebrew, even though those on the path to perform mitzvah are not suspected of harm, that rule ceases to operate when danger is likely. The Torah assumes the need for an army and a police force in a Jewish state. So, you know, he's saying here, excuse me, the Haredi view of this that you don't need an army, you don't need a police force, is not a Jewish perspective. It's not the only Jewish perspective. Moreover, our tradition includes the idea of a growing minimization of the miraculous and divine intervention over the course of history. A comparison of the Tanakh and the Talmud Bavli reveals that in the latter, prophecy has ceased, and divine intervention has become less frequent and less obvious in the biblical times. This reduction in the clarity of providence becomes more dramatic in the modern era. So there's a recognition that there's less divine intervention in modern times. So maybe our focus is more on the biblical outlook, but there's a recognition that today God doesn't intervene as much, and nature plays its role. We have to respect nature and recognize that nature functions and that this is God's will as well. And that's a modern or more modern Orthodox perspective. Okay, Deborah, keep going. Keeping yeshivot, you want
to keep going? Keeping yeshivot open in opposition to Ministry of Health guidelines does not reflect a more authentic Jewish approach, since Judaism mandates that health concerns are of supreme importance. Haredi groups that were slow to realize this were religiously incorrect. It is admittedly true that on the whole, modern Orthodox Jews struggle with belief more than Haredim do. Exposure to the intellectual challenges of evolutionary biology, academic Bible scholarship, and postmodernism, confronting moral questions about women's issues or homosexuality and the social difficulties of a secularized society take their toll.
So that being said, we do have a more sophisticated outlook and we address and struggle with issues more than Haredim do. That being said, keep going.
Okay. That being said, and admitting to the existence of orthopraxy, it is certainly false to assert as a grand generalization that modern Orthodox Jews lack belief. Many of us pray with great seriousness, engage in Torah study, and not just as an intellectual exercise, but as an act of devotion, and utilize a language that talks about God without hesitation. Our intellectual leaders, such as our Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Rabbi Shalom Carmi, and Dr. David Schatz, write essays vindicating their faith commitments.
These are a bunch of modern Orthodox Jewish thinkers. And what he's saying here is that modern Orthodox Jews do believe. You know, are there people in the pews who don't believe enough? Yeah, of course there are. But the leadership certainly believes, and the thinkers certainly believe in God in a serious way. And then he goes on to say, well, you know, you wanted to bring all these proofs that modern Orthodox Jews, you know, dabble in Kabbalah when they need it and segula water and checking their mezuzot. You know, you're bringing anecdotal evidence, not statistical. You know, there's no statistics here. The fact that seculars also engage in such endeavors indicates the lure of such practices is not an argument against modern Orthodoxy. Okay, now he gets to an issue of what's called hishtadlut and bitachon. Now, there is a Haredi, a core part of Haredi ideology is the idea that you need to do a little bit of hishtadlut, do a little bit, and then God will provide. Buy your lottery ticket, you know, that is one way to articulate it, and God will provide you with your parnasa. Okay? And this is an idea that comes up in Sichot Musar, Michtav Meliyahu, the Chazon Ish. This is a Haredi worldview. Okay? God will provide. Okay? And I'll give you some examples of this. We just go to the bottom of the source sheet. You go here to... you know, by the man. Okay, we're just going to do a few more minutes and we'll finish up. By the man, we're told in the midrash, the man, you know, lo nitna Torah lidrosh ela la'ochle haman. The Torah was given for those who eat the man. What does it mean to eat the man? Okay, so the one example of Chaim Shmulevitz argues this means that just like the Jews ate man in the Tanakh in the Midbar, we have to eat the man today, and that means that man is the food that comes from heaven. Study Torah. Don't waste your time working. Don't try to do too much. Just keep the mitzvot and study Torah all day, and God will provide. The man will still fall from heaven. Okay? You have to have bitachon. Okay? This is a Haredi worldview. In our communities, we say, I need to pay the bills. I'm not going to rely on this in the same type of way. And, you know, and this is, now, Lau then goes on to say is he thinks there are flaws in this approach. First, the Hishtadlut approach is empirically incorrect, as human efforts and ingenuity do not produce results in a direct fashion. Those who try harder tend to do better, and those with an intelligent plan achieving more. Am Yisrael is famously warned again, asserting that our strength and the might of our hands accomplished our goals. This is what you quoted, Marilyn. Ravenel explains, first, does not deny that our physical efforts enable our success. After all, one cannot deny empirical evidence. Instead, it reminds us to acknowledge that God created humanity with the power and intelligence to overcome obstacles. The Haredim are saying, don't make effort. Don't intervene. Don't even have a job. Don't have an army, etc. God will provide all these things. Whereas we believe, that God gives us the power, but we still need to engage. We still need to invest. Additionally, the Haredi approach is morally problematic because it potentially leads to a devaluing of human efforts to improve the lives of others, although it certainly does not always do so. Haredim go to doctors, establish impressive chesed organizations. They've been donating plasma during the current crisis. Okay, however, in crucial context, his ideology has had significant negative impact. Kolos for years, while their parents and wives work extremely hard to support them. More significantly, Haredi men in Israel exempt themselves from listening to the IDF. His Histadlut ideology helps explain the ethical failure of an entire community exempting itself from army service while usually showing no gratitude to those who do serve and protect the country. From the Histadlut's perspective, soldiers patrolling the Lebanese border do not ultimately provide protection. So he goes on here about, you know, the flaws in the Haredi perspective that, you know, God will provide everything if you just study Torah all day. And he doesn't think this is the only worldview. We need not worry that Hishtadlut's approach reflects the totality of the rabbinic tradition. Rambam powerfully affirms the reality of the natural order. Rav Kook celebrates the human initiative within a natural order while cautioning about the dangers of overemphasizing bitachon. And Rav Soloveitchik writes that curing, healing the sick is a divine attribute reflecting an activity, rofei cholim, in which man ought to engage. Okay, so you know, these are some of the responses, the modern Orthodox response, that Shaul Magid makes modern Orthodoxy into a straw man. He only quotes the Haredi view on tradition, but he doesn't quote all these other sources, the multiple views that suggest that modern Orthodoxy has a strong basis within Jewish philosophy and traditional Jewish sources as well. Okay, so there's some other sources here in the source sheets. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, who discusses the difference between science and religion, and he believes that science teaches us how the world works, religion gives us meaning, and we have to have the right balance between these two things. We can't deny science, but we certainly can't deny religion. There's Rambam here, a lot of important sources. But just to summarize, we've looked at these three sources, Yitzchak Greenberg, we've looked at Shaul Magid and Rav Yitzchak Blau. Yitzchak Greenberg gives like a sort of an attack of the Haredi perspective. Shaul Magid points out, well, the modern Orthodox perspective is more wanting. And Yitzchak Blau points out, well, I'm going to defend the modern Orthodox perspective and show that it's rooted in tradition. So you really have a whole range of views here, some very powerful views being expressed, and a powerful Jewish debate here. So we're gonna end here with this topic. We've gone way beyond our time for today. I just want to thank you all it's been an amazing year studying with you. I've really, really enjoyed teaching this course and studying with you and working through these issues. And there's so many more isms to study, but we'll have to leave them for another time. This coming year, though, we're going to study a tradition of machloket, great debates in Jewish history and Jewish thought. And there are some fascinating topics that we're going to explore in the next year. Differences between Reform and Orthodoxy, Spinoza, the Rambam, the burning of the Rambam's books, Rav Sadia Gaon and the Jewish calendar. There are so many great debates that litter Jewish theology and Jewish thought. So we're going to look at those, Bezrat Hashem, this coming year. You're all welcome to participate. In the meantime, you know where I am. I'm at Shift A, so come by, say hello, and we'll also see you, please God, in some of the summer
Don't forget to share this.
Please stop.
Don't forget that.
So we can wave to each other.
Yeah. Let me 1 second. Let me stop the sharing here.
Comment.
1 second. Let me stop share. Okay, so everybody gets each other. I'm also going to stop the recording.